Talk Radio.
This is dedicated to all the mothers who have lost sons and daughters in tragedy. I'm here to let you know that God has not forgotten you, mama. He feels your pain. So keep your head up. A mother tears.
Get off the muscle. Kinda hard to get paper when a hater tryna bust you. Either that or the police tryna cuff you. My said when I was young, listen son, man, the streets don't love you. I said I know, cause they don't love nobody. And I hope God watch me, just in case they try to kill or rob me. But I told her, look, don't worry though, cause either way my story wrote. So if they cut my story short, then it was just my time
no,
to go.
All that's left is lots of memories, but no more hugs and kisses to retrieve.
Yeah, and here's the reason. We got those fathers leaving kids killed cause it's grinding season. No time for cheesing, and the hood grazed dug like it's mining season. All time is needed, tears running like her mind is bleeding. What about those mouths spinning? They got those triggers spinning. You can't be a young black man with a hoodie and Skittles and get backed into a corner, and the reason is tough. Those things is beaming.
Y'all ripped and taken out of your arms. Every day feels like a struggle losing your best friend. But in the end, there's a new beginning and it's waiting to begin. Gotta get your life on track and focus on the positives. Keep your head on, mama gotta raise all the other kids. And them kids are gonna be thankful in a couple of years when they appreciate the significance of a mother's
kid. My heart goes out to all these mothers who still shedding tears. If I had the power, I would surely wipe the sins off your face. They're not enough words that I can express to help a mother with a broken heart feel at rest. I just hope to ease your pain that you're feeling inside, because I know many nights you work hard to try to stay strong even though your loved one is gone. But I hope you understand that you're in a better home. A mother's tears.
Another exciting show. You just tuned into 400 Years Entrepreneurship. We're going to be dealing specifically incredible 400 years of black women. We're going to be talking to one of our guests later on tonight, Tiffany N. Cartwright, a Juris Doctorate, Administrative Law Judge, Amaria Products CEO. and other women that will be lined up. I'm Dr. Tatum calling in from California, and we will be bringing on next to talk about this incredible show, Dr. Mary Lee Live, Arnetta Jabari from the West Coast. Are you with us, Sister Arnetta? And as we're waiting for her to come on, I'm going to check and see if Dr. James Cannon. Dr. James Cannon, are you with us? Okay. So we have a few more minutes on our guests. And I'm going to turn it over to Michael Tynes. And Michael Tynes will be introducing our various hosts for the night. Mr. Michael Tynes, are you with us tonight?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Michael Tynes is in your hand now, young man. And take us on to the night's program.
Appreciate it. So as Mr. Tatum said, my name is Michael. I primarily act as a community advocate for self-sufficiency and socioeconomic opportunity in the Black community, as well as an educator, primarily but not exclusively, on issues facing the community, such as socioeconomic disparities and systemic barriers in the community impeding attainment of better health, wealth, and opportunities. And as Mr. Tatum said, before we get into the main topic of discussion, I do want to check and see if any of the other co-hosts, as well as Dr. Mary Lee, are on the line so they can give their introduction before we get into the topic at hand. So do we have Dr. Cannon on yet? Okay, if we don't have Dr. Cannon, do we have Dr. Lee?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Okay, well, welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Lee. I want to thank you for joining us tonight. The team basically will take over the show tonight, as I am traveling on a family emergency, so I am requesting your prayers as we travel. I will come in and occasionally. But we do have a great show lined up for tonight, and we certainly appreciate your joining us. So I'm going to turn it back over to our technician. I want to ask everyone to please tap 1 on your phone so that our technicians can open up your line. When you're not speaking, please mute your phone so that we don't have a lot of background noise. And so we're looking forward to an absolutely great show tonight. So we want to turn it over back to Michael, and then Arnetta Jabari, if you're on. Everyone just has to tap 1 on your phone and your lines will be open. I've been informed that the lines are open. So, Michael, thank you so very much. You've got a great show. Thank you, Tiffany, for joining us tonight. And we will be getting to you very soon. Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I got a text from Dr. Cannon. I don't know if he's on right now. He says he can hear us, but we can't hear him. Dr. Cannon, can you hear us okay?
I think
Michael,
Arnetta,
can you hear me? This is Arnetta.
I can hear you, Arnetta. Yes, I can.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was having that same challenge since the show started with Dr. Tatum. So, yes, I am on. I don't know what the glitch was. And again, I know Dr. Cannon is also on. Yes, I'm so sorry to come in like this, but Dr. Lee, I'm here to support the show. I'm excited, and thank you for this little brief introduction to let you know that this is probably one of the most powerful internet radio shows that I have ever been able to participate with, and I'm excited to be able to engage tonight and excited again this week to listen to the powerful women that will be presenting, again, their entrepreneurial opportunities and endeavors, and we are looking forward to that. So thank you again, and Michael, I appreciate you giving me another chance to chime back in. Thank you.
No problem. And I just got another text from Mr. Cannon. Dr. Cannon, are you on? Are you able to tap into the line?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Beautiful. To the audience and to our guest tonight, this is going to be an exciting show as usual. Mike, I appreciate you as well as you do what you do and bring us to the table intellectually in this conversation tonight. I understand that Dr. Lee will be jumping in and out, ladies and gentlemen. But in any event, there's so much going on in this nation. There's so much going on right now that we do need wise counsel. We need wise counsel to come to the table. Many young people across this nation don't have grandma or grandpa that they can go to and get wise counsel, so they have to come to the village. And what I'm finding is, ladies and gentlemen, that a lot of people are not even trusting the church anymore. That it seems like we used to can go find people in the church that have wisdom that they can pass down to the youth. But it's seeming now that our parents are kind of afraid, even when they send their children to the church house. They don't have the confidence that they used to have, that they could send their babies off to the church all by themselves and understanding that they're going to be okay and that they were going to get wise counsel. A lot of our young men are getting locked up in jail, doing knucklehead things and getting sentences on their lives that changes their lives and breaking their mama's heart. So when we can get wisdom, when we can get wisdom to come to the table, and we can talk about our criminal justice system, we can talk about 400 years of due process, 400 years of entrepreneurship in this country. Dr. King said we've got our political rights for marching, our voting rights, but there's some economics and some things that need to be shared. We need to learn how to talk economically about what's going on in our families and in this country. We need to talk fiscally, controlling the budgets in our own lives, so that when other ethnic groups look at us as Afro-American people, one thing they'll say about us is that we handle our money well, that we're well-disciplined in handling our money. We're well-disciplined in how we handle our education. When we go through the education system, we come out magnum cum laude. We become not only the attorney, but then we become the judge. And ladies and gentlemen, that's why we're here tonight. We're here to get some wisdom from one that can share it and put it on the table. And so I just appreciate all of our guests tonight. I got in kind of late, didn't get all the information on our guests, and so I'm not going to try to come off the top of my head. I'm just going to throw it back to my brother Michael as he introduced our guest tonight.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Dr. Cannon. So for tonight, we'll be speaking with Miss Tiffany Nicole Cartwright, who did her JD at University of Michigan and previously clerked for the Michigan Supreme Court, as well as being an assistant attorney general and administrative law judge for the state of Michigan. Ms. Cartwright is also a founder and currently CEO of Amara Products, a certified woman-owned, minority-owned company for her company manufacturers. And she's also successfully pitched her products to Shark Tank in Detroit. Her products are on Walmart.com, as well as in Meijer, and will soon be launching on shelves throughout the entire country. Ms. Cartwright is a community-centered individual, very committed to the community, and she's opening a manufacturing facility in the city of Detroit where she'll provide jobs, training, and mentorship to women, in particular women who've been victims of human trafficking or domestic violence. Ms. Cartwright is also, besides being legally certified and an entrepreneur, a proud mother of two amazing children, Taylor and Evan, and she enjoys her hobbies as well as things like French and, let's actually get directly into some of details about your background, Ms. Cartwright, with that introduction. It's a pretty long introduction here. You're a very accomplished individual. So with you being an entrepreneur as well as someone who is certified in dealings of the law, I just have to ask, what was your journey like in pursuing those two things when you first set out? How difficult was it? Was it a path that I guess you already had planned out and you can see yourself easily finishing, or was it somewhat of a struggle? How did you accomplish those two things? Because those are two very significant achievements.
Yes, thank you so much. Well, first and foremost, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you for having me on. And that's a great question. And as you said, I actually did not start off. I was not one who grew up as a child endeavoring to become an entrepreneur. There were no business owners, to my knowledge, in my family coming up. And so I was raised, go to school, you know, get a good job, get good grades, and be successful. And so I had always gotten good grades, did well in school, and actually graduated with a degree in business and became an attorney, not so much because of any alleged prestige or anything like that. I decided to practice law because I wanted to right the wrongs that I saw growing up as an African-American woman in this country. And so that was how the pursuit of law took place. And I had, as stated, worked for our Supreme Court. I served as an assistant attorney general. And because of that, I was invited to become an administrative law judge for the state of Michigan. While working as a judge, I suddenly, without notice, here in Michigan, due to budget cuts, I lost my job. And so I got the pink slip. I went from presiding over unemployment hearings to collecting an unemployment check, just like that. And so it was at that time, my brother, who's also my pastor and my mentor, he's the founder here in Detroit of Global Empowerment Ministries, an organization that is committed to teaching people in the community how to become business owners for the purpose of bringing change. And he was on the radio doing a radio show. And he was talking, and I felt it was directed at me because prior to that, my daughter Taylor, who you referenced earlier, my daughter was born with eczema. And so, again, without any aspirations of becoming an entrepreneur, I was a new mom, and I was looking for natural organic remedies for her skin. I did not want to use steroids or any harsh chemicals or things along those lines. And so I literally got in the kitchen, and I started mixing concoctions, mixing up natural ingredients to cure her eczema, never dreaming it would become a skin line. Well, I would give it away for holiday gifts, Mother's Day gifts, things like that. And it just so happens that when that job loss took place, I'm at a point where I've lost everything. And it's like, well, where do we go from here? What do we do now? We've lost everything. And again, it was at that time that I heard my mentor, my brother on the radio, and he says, listen, he said, that invention that's inside of you, he said, that book that's inside of you, he said, those recipes that were given to you from your mother, your grandmother, your auntie, he said, those concoctions you've been mixing in your kitchen, he said, that's a business that you're sitting on. And he said, God didn't give that to you for you to sit on it. He gave you that so you could share it with the world. That was my epiphany. That was my aha moment. And I thought, you know what? He's talking to me. What am I doing here? It's time to pick myself up. Let's go for it and let's start a business. Now, he offers a free class that teaches you how to incorporate your business. He teaches everyone about your tax ID number, your Dun & Bradstreet, all of that. And so I actually walked through all of the steps that he prescribed, and I started that business. And it just so happens that around that time or shortly thereafter, he announced that Shark Tank was coming to Detroit, and they were looking for people to come and pitch their products. And so Shark Tank does a very similar program to American Idol, where they go from city to city, and they travel to these major cities, and they allow people to come in and pitch their products. So here I am with this skincare line, these products that I've been giving away all this time, and I decided, again, I've lost everything. What do I have to lose? And I actually took it down to Tech Town here in Detroit and was able to pitch it to the Shark Tank team successfully. So that was super, super exciting. I have not gone to L.A. yet, so I don't have an episode that I can tell everyone to look at. However, I am still believing that, you know, I will be traveling to L.A. soon, and I will actually be presenting the products to the actual sharks there in Los Angeles. Additionally, he announced later that Walmart has a supplier program where they invite people, business owners who have products, to come and pitch their products at their headquarters in Bentonville, Arkansas, as part of their Made in America campaign. And so, again, with the same attitude, let's go for it. What do we have to lose? I traveled with my son, Evan, and my mom, who I hope is on the call right now as well. We drove down to Bentonville, Arkansas, and I actually was able to pitch my products, those same skincare products, to buyers, and I was able to successfully pitch those products and get a deal with Walmart to place the product in stores. They tested one of them, and they're now going to be launching in week 32, which is coming up very soon. They'll be launching of those 7 products on store shelves throughout the country. So it's been a winding road. It's been quite a journey, but it's been an amazing, awesome journey. And so I'm greatly thankful and just super excited about what God is doing.
Wow, excellent. Appreciate that explanation. That's remarkable. So entrepreneurship and starting a business for you was more so, initially at least, more so a matter of self-sufficiency and providing for yourself after that job loss to supplement your prior career in law. Excellent. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And like every great product, I always say everything that happens when it comes to business, every product that we see right now, it all comes about as a result of a need.
Absolutely. And yeah, necessity being the mother of invention is what the phrase actually, the common phrase, and you obviously had a necessity to invent and were, you know, the clearest embodiment of that phrase. So that's excellent. Let me ask you now, moving on from, you know, what you just gave us or your explanation of how you got into this business, let me ask you, what are some of the specific products that you sell? You mentioned that you sell products relating to alleviating symptoms of eczema. Could you go maybe a little bit more in depth into what your business is, how it differs from other businesses that are in the same industry of skincare?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And so my product, I do body scrubs. They're natural body scrubs. I don't use phthalates. There's no parabens. There's no mineral oil. There's no animal testing. And so they actually have products and ingredients that you can actually pronounce that are on the label. And so there are 7 different ones, and they're very, very different. They're all body scrubs, but, for example, I have a peppermint eucalyptus scrub that is a great foot scrub, and it's infused with peppermint and eucalyptus essential oil. So all of them, they exfoliate and moisturize at the same time. I have a coffee scrub I call coffee caviar in a jar, nature's best kept secret, because coffee has been for years known to help with cellulite, stretch marks, as well as wrinkles. And so I have a coffee scrub that's absolutely awesome and amazing. And I often explain to people that in the same way that coffee drinkers, the way that, you know, we drink coffee in the morning to wake us up, well, in the same way that coffee wakes us up in the morning, coffee also wakes up our skin cells the same way. And so so it's really, again, another great skincare ingredient. I have a lavender scrub that is infused with lavender essential oil, and that is great for having a calming and relaxing effect, helping us to decompress at the end of a hard day. There's also brown sugar. It's a great humectant, and so I use that one in a scrub as well. It's called Bubbling Brown Sugar. That's actually the one that Walmart first tested, so it's probably one of the more popular ones just because it's gotten more exposure. And then there's also lemon, another great pick-me-up in the morning. And I have Mad About Mango, and then there's Strawberry Crush. And so they're all great body scrubs. They all exfoliate and moisturize. And as I said, unlike some of the products that are on the market, they're not water-based, and I don't use glycerin. They're actually scrubs that go directly to the skin and help keep the skin moisturized. One of the greatest differentiators, though, if I may, is the fact that with my skincare line, I am in the process here in the city of Detroit of launching a manufacturing facility where, as mentioned in my bio, where I am looking to hire women who have been victims of human trafficking as well as domestic violence, as well as women who are returning citizens, to actually help with manufacturing the products and sending it off to big box retailers. And so that is the commitment that I have. That is my way of serving the community, and that's really the why behind what I'm doing.
Excellent. And we have some, I don't know, there's a little bit of, I think, noise in the background. If everyone who's not currently speaking could mute their phones or their devices, that would be very much appreciated. The reason why I asked for that delineation between your business and other businesses, Ms. Cartwright, is because something that I found very important that you mentioned characterizes your business is its reliance on natural products, because that is a very important point in terms of business that deals in chemicals, in particular chemicals that Black people use, in particular Black women. Like, we know that a lot of very toxic chemicals are in things like hair care products that are marketed heavily to black women, and that black women consume more so than women of other races, you know, toxic hair care products that have been shown to increase cancer rates and infertility rates in black women. So your reliance on more natural products is very much appreciated and very much needed. So that's something that I noticed for that reason.
Okay. Yes, with thank that, you very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Oh, you can go ahead.
No, I was just stating thank you for that, because one of the things that I've committed to is that because this product was developed as a result of helping my daughter's skin, you know, I have made a commitment that I will not compromise the integrity of my brand for anyone. And there's no deal that I want to see. I had to make that distinction clear to a buyer in speaking and saying that, listen, you know, these products, I'm not going to substitute and swap them out for cheap, dangerous ingredients, because that defeats the whole purpose for which my business was founded in the first place. And so, as you said, knowing what I know about what's out there and what people are using, that just to me heightens the commitment to making sure that I produce quality products, quality skincare products that are safe.
Well, about that, you said something that piqued my interest. Have you been approached, or have you had any external pressures that, you know, obviously you said you've resisted that, you're staying true to your ethical commitment to making natural products that are safe for people, but have you experienced any pressuring or any suggestion from the outside to maybe decrease the quality of your products? Just curious on my end.
You know, it's more so an observation. Like right now, a lot of companies in general are kind of going to the table now with a so-called exit strategy. And that exit strategy many times is comprised of a plan, if you will, to sell out at some point. So yeah, let's grow the business and then let's just sell it. And I guess for me, I'm resisting that because I believe OCP, own it, control it, pass it down. And so, you know,
absolutely,
oftentimes when we think about growing it for the purpose of just selling the business, what we don't understand is that when you sell that company, you give up that ownership, you're also giving up the power that you had. In other words, if I just grow my business and my exit strategy is to sell it to ABC, some big conglomerate, what I have to understand is that when you make that decision to sell, that big conglomerate ABC company, they may not have your commitment to helping your community. They may not hire people that look like you. They may not
absolutely
care about returning citizens or women who have been victimized by domestic violence and human trafficking. And so when I say, that's what I'm talking about, when I say my commitment is that I'm not trying to grow my business with an exit strategy that I'm going to dump it for $20 million so that, you know, and let that company compromise the integrity of the brand. You know, one of the great things about starting from where I am is that I control my formulations. I control what goes into it. When you sell, again, with an exit strategy, sometimes, and again, I'm not trying to throw shade at anyone. People do what they do, but I'm talking about myself personally. I have no desire to sell to a company that may or may not maintain the integrity of my brand, that may or may not use the same ingredients that I've committed to using, that may or may not give jobs to the people that I've designated that I want to help.
Absolutely. Excellent. Very powerful. Let me ask you now, what are some of the successes that you've seen your business accrue? Some of the successes perhaps that motivate you to continue on this path? How successful has your business been, would you say?
You know, it's been absolutely amazing, and I give God all the glory for it. The fact that my first, you know, deal, if you will, with a big box retailer was Walmart. There have been so many people that have looked and been like, you know, how did you get Walmart? You don't start with a Walmart. Walmart is your end game. And I just say to that, you know what? You don't know the God I serve. When there's a purpose that's bigger than you and you understand that it's bigger than you, then you know that with God, and I truly believe with God, all things are possible. And so, yes, the Walmart door has been open. Yes, here locally, the Meijer door has been open. Yes, there are other retailers that are opening doors. And I'm thankful for all of that because it has been absolutely amazing. I know that there are many people who have products. Lots of people do body scrubs the whole nine. So just to have these type of opportunities present themselves has been nothing short of amazing. The same with Shark Tank, to be able to pitch it here in Detroit and to get a yes from it. It's been amazing. Last month, Black Enterprise and Entrepreneur Magazine, the Michigan Chronicle, they all did write-ups about my brand, about my business. So that was like just incredible. And I am just so deeply honored and just so grateful because, again, these are once-in-a-lifetime opportunities that have been afforded. But you know what? I'll tell you what is equally so awesome and amazing to me is to be able to gift shelters with my product, to be able to talk to directors, and to right now I'm in the process of putting job descriptions in place. I'm in the process of putting together the personnel and the human resources side of it to go and to have the opportunity to change the lives of others. That, above everything, is what matters most to me. So I'm excited about what the brand is doing, but I'm even more excited about the lives that are going to be changed as a result of it, because my goal with my business, again, it's not just about getting products on the shelf. It's about the why. And so what really excites me is the notion that I'm going to help young mothers. I'm going to help young women escape a life of trafficking. I'm going to help women escape violent, abusive relationships. I'm going to help women who've been incarcerated and give them a new lease on life. Those who will walk through an office door and have the application thrown in the trash before they can get out the door. That's going to be just the opposite. That's going to be a requirement. And to know that my goal is not only to give them a job, like the saying, to give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day, but teach him how to fish and he'll eat for a lifetime. What's most exciting is knowing that not only will they learn how to perform the job, but I want to also help them become business owners and entrepreneurs so that they can create legacies for their families as well.
Excellent. Community development, starting with the most integral part of the community, the women in the community. So excellent. Shifting gears then, towards that side of your business, side of entrepreneurial work, what would it look like? You don't have to get into any more specifics than you want to, but if you're bringing in a young woman who's been victimized by, let's say, human trafficking or domestic violence, what does it look like at an entry level when they first come to your business? How do they get started and what are their options?
Right. And what's so nice is that, you know, I'll tell you, I know how to ship products and get them in and the whole nine. But for some reason, I just believe, again, it's been guys kept me in the beauty business. And I think the reason is because it's already something that women are naturally interested to. These products, they smell amazing. They work amazing. And so it's really, I like to call it fun, the manufacturing process, because it is fun and it's a great product. And so they'll be able to come in, and what's nice is that you don't have to be a chemist. You don't have to have any particular educational background or anything like that. There'll be something for everyone to do. So these are entry-level positions where there's absolutely no experience required at all. And for those who may be able to bring something to the table, then we'll accommodate that as well. But for the most part, like I said, when you come in, there won't be any, like there's no requirements of any educational background or anything like that. They just have to have a willingness to come to the table, to show up and come to work. And I'll tell you, honestly, the job part of it is actually just the tip of the iceberg, because as I said, I also want to provide the training. And eventually what I want to do is expand it so that at some point, I'll be able to also provide housing for them. And I also, one of the big key areas that I want to be able to do is actually bring in mental health experts and specialists that can provide counseling and therapy and things like that so that they can have wholeness, a more holistic approach. And I think that's going to differentiate it from a lot of what we see out here. But ultimately, that is what my goal for the women is going to be, is just total wholeness. Because I know that even when you're working, if there are things that you've been through, there's experiences that you've been through, sometimes there's going to be a need for some therapy and some counseling to help get past that, to help move beyond it. And so I want to be able to give these women all the tools they need to be successful.
Excellent. Let me ask you, Ms. Cartwright, how does your background in law enhance or aid your entrepreneurship?
You know, they really do work hand in hand. I think it's because of having practiced law. What I've learned is the total need for entrepreneurship. One thing I learned in terms of being a judge and suddenly without notice losing that position due to budget cuts, I learned that you always have to own something. You never want to put your destiny, your future, your livelihood into the hands of someone else. And so I think that in terms of jobs in general, that's one of the things I've learned, is that you always have to have a plan B or something that you can rely upon so that you can sustain yourself. And I also think that having practiced law for so long, it has made me keenly aware of the injustices that go on, and how there's such a, and I'm sorry, but there's such a disparity when it comes to our legal system and our system of justice in this country. And the only way, and this is just my, the only way that I believe that we're going to change it is through business ownership, through entrepreneurship. I think that the only way that we're going to be able to help people who've been incarcerated to not return to a life of crime is to give them an option, a viable alternative, a viable option. And that's what I've seen. I've seen, you know, where you can go into a courtroom and the outcome of the case is based upon whose name is on the pleadings.
Excellent. Before we go on to some more questions and get further into the conversation, I want to allow a short little period of time here for any of the co-hosts to chime in and add any questions or comments before we proceed.
This is Annetta. Michael, am I on?
Yes, you are.
You know, as an African-American woman and just having the respect, I first want to say thank you so much for lending your gifts and talents and, again, to this show tonight. So inspirational. You carved out a niche in a market that would literally be a black, just a wall, you know, that would be so black. So bleak that we couldn't press through, and you tunneled through. I mean, for something that we may see as simple as eczema, I face that, and a lot of African Americans face that challenge, and it's absolutely devastating, especially to children when they don't know how to get rid of it. So I admonish you in so many ways. I do want to ask you, what gave you, I know I heard you speak about how your doors closed and you just allowed yourself to press through to another door. The gift of being able to help women that may not be able to pull up those bootstraps, is that some sort of an area that you'll set up within the employment area that you want to provide income and opportunities for people that may not have that? Is that one of the counseling sessions or components of what your company will provide?
Absolutely. So, yes, we definitely want to provide those jobs because, again, you know, if people can't take care of themselves, if they can't feed their children, if they can't care for their families, then it's really hard to communicate anything else. And so that's why I'm starting with the finances to give them the income that they need. But in addition to that, the counseling, the therapy, that's something that I want to be able to provide just because of the nature of the people that I'm looking to bring help to. I think that right now, especially in the midst of the pandemic, now more than ever, the mental health challenges are, they're just enormous right now. And when you're talking about helping women who've been victims, who've been in violent relationships, who've been abused sexually, emotionally.
Yeah.
We've got to give them what they need, again, to be whole. When that pain is there, when they've been through that, that's not something when you may walk out of the prison, that doesn't mean you, that all those experiences that you've been through, they don't just fall off. And so,
that's right.
And so my goal, again, is to provide total rehabilitation, if you will. And oftentimes, if I believe that if that mental health component is not there, if we don't get them the support that they need, then I believe that it opens up the opportunity or the temptation, if you will, to resort back to whatever it is that they've been delivered from. And that's what I want to avoid.
That's right. Yes.
Absolutely.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Yes. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And before I let it out,
I have a question. I have a question if I could jump in. This is Mr. Cannon.
Well, go right ahead, Mr. Cannon.
Ma'am, I'm so very impressed for a whole lot of reasons. I believe that, you know, we have a lot of the answers for our problems, but we also have a lot of the excuses for those answers. My question is, in your rise to come through the education system to the point where you could, you know, go into judgeship, I'm curious, as you put your business together and as you deal with people from all over the country and the world, in your honest opinion, why aren't there more Afro-American ladies and young men going into becoming attorneys, going into law. We need it so desperately. Why aren't more Afro-American people rising and succeeding in business on a powerful level? My question is, in your observation as you traveled, is it systemic racism that have kept people from doing what you've done, going through school, getting your law degree, coming, being successful in so many areas? In your observation, are we fighting with systemic racism that's keeping our children and grandchildren down from succeeding here in America in the 21st century today? Is that our problem?
Oh, it absolutely is a problem. You know, when you, for us, when you as a black person, when you go to law school, first of all, we'll even backtrack to even the application process. So for many of us, if we're the first attorneys in our family, the first judges or what have you, in most cases, we had to get there on our own merits. However, there are others who are maybe second, third, and fourth generation. And, you know, like here in Detroit, I say this all the time, when I look at, and they run ads constantly, but when you look at these firms, and this is what we have to understand is going on. So we have, and I'm not throwing shade on any community or anything like that. I'm just saying this is the way it works. So we have a very prominent firm in Michigan, and they say it's the first family of law. And what people don't understand is that when you have a case that you want that firm to take, they don't even represent anyone anymore. What they do is that they do the intake, they pay for the ads, and then that case is passed off to another member of their community. And that's the person that's actually going to handle the case for you, not the one you see on TV. It's chances are it's going to go to someone else, again, who is from that same community. Conversely, we as African Americans don't have a system like that. We don't have firms where we can send all the work to other black people or other black attorneys. It doesn't work that way. We don't have that system in place. And so when you look at it that way, and not only that, even the representation at the big firms that you see running the ads all day, most of them, I can tell you, in many cases, there's not one African American person, period, attorney on staff. Male or female. When you're talking about the LSAT and the admissions process, when you are third, fourth, fifth generation Harvard law, guess what? Harvard's not going to turn you down. When mom, dad, grandpa, or whoever has their name on buildings on the campus, guess what? You don't have to bring anything to the table. You're going to get in. You're going to get a yes, and you're going to graduate. When the time came around for the bar exam, we found out there were people who had copies, not us, of course, unless we were able to connect with someone who had it, but there were copies of bar exams that were literally floating around that most of us did not have access to unless, like I said, one person got a hold of it was able to share it with other people. And so those are, as you said, systemic racism and issues that have gone on and for, you know, like I said, since the beginning of time, and will continue to be that way. Now, when it comes to entrepreneurship, I really think that the reason why we also, like my brother says, oftentimes we lead the nation when it comes to poverty, unemployment, incarceration, refusal, but we also have the smallest number of entrepreneurs. Part of that, I believe, is an exposure issue as well. Because in many of our families, when you think about it, when we're raised, we're told, get good grades and get a good job, especially here. This is the Motor City. We're the manufacturing cop, so chances are someone in your family worked for the big three, and that's what brought them here from the South. They migrate here from the South, and they got what was considered a good job. And so if you were able to get a good job, buy a home, buy a car, put your kids through school, then that was it. And so entrepreneurship was never really put on the table as an option. When you're in school, there's not – and it may have changed a little bit now, but I know coming up for me, there weren't entrepreneurship classes that you could take. There was nothing to teach you how to own or run a business. And there are so many – even within the bounds of entrepreneurship, there are so many things that we just have not been privy to. There is certification for businesses, minority-owned businesses. There's the billion-dollar roundtable that commits $1 billion to black-owned, minority-owned businesses that we don't even know about. There are organizations that exist that most people don't even know about. And so it's like entrepreneurship has been – the world's best kept secret. And when you're the first one that's in your family, it's a tough area to break into when you don't have the support, when you don't have the knowledge. And so one of the things that I'm so thankful for is here in Detroit, we have the organization that I mentioned before, Global Empowerment, where people are literally coming off the street and learning how to become business owners. It's not that we're not capable. It's not that we're not competent. It's not that we're not qualified. We just have not been exposed. We have not been taught. And that's the only difference. There's trained and there's untrained. So there's no lack of anything. We need the knowledge. And what it's also incumbent upon us to do in order to change that, or to break those chains of systemic racism is that we have to support one another and we have to work together. One of the things that he says is when that door opens for you, you don't let it close behind you. When the door opens for you as an African American, you put your foot in that door and you hold it open and you bring as many people over with you as you can. And so because of that, that's what's been imparted in me and that's what it's my goal to do. We have a group of women, other fellow black woman entrepreneurs who are on the call right now. And all of us, we are a team, and we are going on to big box retail stores that are opening in Detroit in September, and all of our products are going to be showcased, all of us, black-owned businesses. Why? Because of sharing the opportunity, sharing the knowledge, sharing the information. We have to change it. Nothing's going to change. Yes, there's systemic racism, but the bigger question is, what are we going to do about it?
This is Dr. Lee. I want to jump in here. This has just been awesome, and I want to just thank you all so very, very much that you're here. I appreciate you all so much, and I think this is a very good time for us to hear from your team of incredible women who are here with you tonight. Thank you so much, Ms. Cartwright. Thank you, Michael. Thank you all. And I appreciate you guys letting me just jump in here this way tonight. It's very, very helpful, you know, for me to be able to do this, to listen and travel at the same time. So everyone's lines are open, Michael, and Dr. Cannon and Dr. Tatum and Annetta, thank you so very, very much. I just love you guys. So let's give we've got probably 10 at least, you know, incredible entrepreneurial women here, and we want to hear from them. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. I'm not sure who's controlling the lines. I don't know whose line we want to open up first. I don't have control over opening.
Actually open. They're all actually open right now. And so I don't know how.
I'll facilitate it. Yeah, I'll facilitate it through for you.
Ms. Cartwright, since you know who all is there with you, maybe you can just ask each one, you know, call them by name, and then they can chime in. Is that okay?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And I don't control, but if there's anyone who is on that's from Global that has a product that's going into Meijer that would like to share your experience, talk about your business and the upcoming amazing opportunity, please feel free to chime in.
Okay, yep. Good evening. Okay. Go ahead, Jackie. This is Charlotte. Go ahead, Jackie. Oh.
Yeah, my name is Jackie, and I'm the president and CEO of Crystal Accessory Skin and Hair Care. Well, I would like to just talk about briefly not only why I got started in the business, but Tiffany did such a good job representing us for one thing that we find and we decided that we wanted to do our own factory is that because of racism, we haven't been able to find a contract manufacturer that is willing to work with us because we are small businesses, and this is one of the major problems that we run into. So they're not willing to work with us. They're not willing to produce our products based on our standards. They do, for the most part, want to interject their formula based on what we give them. They're not giving us back, but they don't even want to produce our product. So that's been one of the major holdbacks for a lot of people being able to get into the cosmetic business because it's very competitive. but it's also very costly to get into that market. And so that's one of our major hurdles that we got to find out how we can overcome that and all work together, because the financing, we can't go to the bank and require or ask for a loan for $1 million to get us started developing our factory. We can't do that. We don't have access to those types of resources for the most part. I know I don't. I can only speak for myself. But it's still something that we need. And in order to get your products in the big box stores, they do require that you use a contract manufacturer. And that's been one of our biggest hurdles that we have not mastered yet.
Thank you. And Charlotte, were you on the call too?
Yes, I am. Good evening, everyone. It's good to hear from everyone and share the stories, and thanks for your time. My name is Charlotte Oden, and I'm the owner of Clear Choice Premier Products. My company is also certified through the NMSDC, Women-Owned Small Business, the HubZone, and the SBA. Just like Tiffany, I heard the radio program, and I was loving what the mentor was talking about, just creating more entrepreneurs within the Black communities, empowering us, helping us to be producers and less consumers. So I actually went into the meeting, which is absolutely free. I learned how to start my own business, how to get it incorporated, how to get it certified through all the organizations that I just mentioned. Also, my products are in stores, so the primary business of my company is mass supply and distribution to retailers nationwide, and we help them add incremental dollars to their bottom line within a 30-day period. So my products are plastic disposable tableware products, like plastic cups, plates, bowls, so your everyday household essentials, so people buy over and over again. That industry, just for one of my products, actually has an annual revenue of over $15 billion. And of course, with COVID, being that people are working from home and the convenience and not having to wash dishes, et cetera, that number is projected to increase more than 33% through the year 2025. So my company, again, just like Tiffany, my mission is to empower people within the community by creating jobs and also training up other entrepreneurs. I have products in Walmart, like Tiffany, and then because Tiffany, just like she said, you know, she made the connect within Meijer and left the door, stuck her foot in the door and pulled all of us in, and she's continuing that work. There's a group of us that's on the call today, but she's also continuing that work along with her brother, Mr. Cartwright. You know, the entire family is doing some amazing things all for free to train people within our community so that we can all be empowered and have longevity within our families and be able to pass it on and use our dollars to actually bring change within communities. So that's pretty much it. I don't want to go on too much longer, but thanks everyone for your time and for having us tonight.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Anyone else on the call from team?
Hi,
hello?
It's Kimberly.
Hi, Kim.
Hi. I'm Kimberly Jones, and I'm the owner of Epic Infants. And Epic Infants is a provider of organic baby wipes. That was our first product, and that's what the product that I started with. And from the baby wipes, I expanded the brand into an organic cleansing wipe, and also an organic antibacterial wipe, which became very popular during the COVID-19 pandemic. And like everybody else on the line, like Tiffany, I am a product of global empowerment. I heard the broadcast on the radio one Sunday morning. I was actually looking for some gospel music, and there wasn't any on. And I heard the gentleman, Mr. Cartwright, talking about entrepreneurship, business, how it's possible, the history, and how much money the Walton family made. So, of course, I went to the meeting, and I from there I learned how to pick a product and market it. And the reason that I chose the organic wipes was because I actually was providing home care services to the urban community, to the underserved in the Metropolitan Detroit area. And these moms wouldn't let me come educate them on their health and nutrition because they were concerned with other things. And they needed things like wipes and diapers and socks and bibs. So I just started keeping these things in my car. And when they would tell me they don't want to have an appointment with me to discuss their health, I would ask them, what did they need? And they would say, well, I need some wipes or I need some diapers. And I would say, well, let me bring them to you. And that was, and I used it as a way to allow them to educate me. And from there, my business was birthed. And what I would like to do with the Epic brand is that I would like to help young mothers, such as the community that I started off serving. And I also, I'm very passionate about homelessness. I go on the streets and I donate my wipes to the homeless people. I want to eradicate homelessness in our city.
Amen. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you. I appreciate you, Sister Tiffany.
Absolutely. Thank you. Anyone else on the call that hasn't spoken yet?
Hi, Tiffany. This is Ella.
Lee,
how are you? How's everybody tonight? I've been with Global Empowerment Ministries for 3 years, and it's been an amazing journey. I was scared, you know. I was brought up also to go to school, get a good job, but I took a different turn when I got caught up into street life, and I did seven years of prison, federal prison. I knew there was a calling on my life. My parents didn't raise me to be be out in the streets doing things that I shouldn't be doing. So I learned from that experience. And the good thing about entrepreneurship is that you can have a felony and own a business. So I came to Global Empowerment, similar like Kim did, and I constantly just learn and study and to the wee hours, because I know it was a calling on my life, a purpose. My business is food and beverage, and what it brings to me as when I was a kid growing up, my mother's from the South. We sat around, cooked, picked vegetables in the South, in South Carolina. And so food, bringing that unity back together as a family whole. So I'm in food and beverage. My products are going into Myers as well. And thank you, Tiffany. We are humbly grateful for this opportunity. And I am, because I refuse to go back to what I used to do. And God changed my heart and my mind, and I renew my mind every day. So my product is barbecue sauce, for one. I do have a Bloody Mary mix, and Myers also want me to develop my seafood gumbo. So, and my philanthropic part of my life is bullying. I was bullied as a kid and some of my adult life. So that's a passion of mine to get my nonprofit, which is Invisible Pain, and work towards, you know, helping children cope in this new day and age. And also, you know, I've been envisioned to have a factory of myself, of my own, to help employ other people, and partnership with Sister Tiffany, with entering citizens, women coming back into society, because believe me, it's very, very hard, and it's so easy for them to turn back because they can't feed their families, they can't survive, and they go back to the streets. So that's a little bit about what I want to do. And I also have another company, and it's called Amelia Grace Collections, and I sell sunglasses and optical wear. So I'm a little older probably than everybody on the call. I'm 64, but being in under the Word, I was told not to give up. And there's so many scriptures in the Bible about us being entrepreneurs. All we have to do is be obedient and do, you know, I wish I had followed the directions of my parents and I wouldn't be there, but I might not be here where I'm at today as an entrepreneur. So I'm not going to take up everybody's time, but I wanted to express myself and let you know, our hearts are in it and it's about the heart and what we have for our people because our kids are straying away and we have to bring the village. As Dr. Cannon said, we got to bring our village back together again and take care of our people. So thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight too, Tiffany, and all the other guests that's on here. And our great
Yes, thank you, Ellen, so much. Yep, thank you. Do we have time for more, or should we turn it back?
No, keep coming.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you. All right, anyone else that hasn't spoken yet that would like to? Go ahead.
Hi, this is Crystal Wilson. Hello?
Go ahead, Crystal.
Oh, hi, everybody. This is Crystal Wilson. I am a licensed esthetician, and Tiffany Cartwright is my mentor. My business is Crystal Clear Beauty, and that's spelled C-L-Y-E-A-R, Crystal Clear Skincare and Beauty. And I met Tiffany in the most faith-based way. I met her through Facebook. I seen she had an ad. And she was trying to teach people how to get their products into stores, but she didn't know that I was already doing it, but I was stuck at a point. And so I met her over the phone, and we talked, and for a whole, like, almost a year, she took me under her wing, and every week she would have meetings with me over the phone one-on-one, and we would go through the things that we were supposed to do to get the products into the stores. And then I met these wonderful women that are on the phone, and we would make baskets and send them out to Target, and we would send them out to all these big retailer stores. We didn't know where these products were going to end up or whatever. We just used our faith. And by knowing these women and Tiffany, my faith have just grown, stretched, and I ended up getting my products on Walmart.com as well as Meijer, and she really does do what she says. She leaves that door open, and I watch everything that she does, and because of that, I'm doing everything that I can to do the same thing, hold the door up for other women. And my goal as an esthetician and a business owner with Spaland Mobile Spa, we want to create a 501c3 to help women as well, homeless women, to help them get back into the workforce. So we want to make them over by giving them facials and massages, and we want to help them with their mental, and we want to give them confidence and help them with their skincare. And I want to do that because I've watched Tiffany take young women and other women, you know, and help them with their confidence. Because when you have a job or career that you're passionate about and that you have a purpose, it makes you want to do better in life. And I'm leaving a legacy for my girls. I have two girls. And this has been awesome and amazing, being on the phone call with these women on Zoom calls. We have strategies to get in these big retailer stores, and I am just so thankful that I have met Tiffany and these other women, and I am so excited about this this warehouse that we're trying to get into, and I just hope and pray that it doesn't take any longer. And I just thank you guys for allowing me to get on this phone call. Thank you, Tiffany, for inviting me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Yes, thank you so very much, Crystal. Greatly appreciate it. There was someone else, too, that was speaking or that was starting with Crystal. Can that person go ahead? I'm not sure who it was.
Yes, it was me. Hi, this is Charity Shorter, and I'm the owner and CEO of Naturally DM Me. I just want to thank everybody for the opportunity tonight to be on this call. I won't hold you long because basically everything that Tiffany has said with her whole ambition and mission to be able to bring change is basically what my business is embodied around. As you know, the name, I'm going to say the name again, Naturally Be In Me, is basically about self-love and confidence. I sell hair care products that are all natural and organic that actually help to grow your hair back in as little as 7 days. And I basically started this business because I had a bout where my hair had fell out and I lost confidence. And I also grew up, you know, basically we were pretty much taught to hate ourselves and not like our hair to be nappy. I was always putting like perms and processing my hair and doing all kind of different things until eventually, you know, one day when my hair fell out real bad, I started this business. I started researching my hair as an African-American woman. I started looking at the products, the ingredients that I was putting in my head, and it just changed everything because I realized I was actually taking things that was putting things in my hair that was actually causing my health to deteriorate. So after that, I said, wow, I need to start actually doing something. So when I did, I started in my kitchen just like Tiffany, mixing up things and batches, and I was doing it, and my hair just started thriving and growing. I went completely natural. I had cut all of my hair off, and it grew back all the way back past waist length after that. And then I just was just like Tiffany, giving out my products to the family. Everybody like, whoa, how your hair grow, how you do this and this and the other. So eventually I was able to sit back and I looked and I said, wow, I can really start a business with this. And I have helped so many people that had alopecia. I mean, just to give a small testimony real quick about a young girl who was wearing wigs because she has alopecia and she was only 7 years old at the time. Her mother started using my products, and in 21 days, this baby hair was bald. In 21 days, this baby had half of her hair back on her head. She had a few spots that wasn't there, but after 3 months, she had a head full of hair, and this child was diagnosed with alopecia, and it was, she tried every product. This baby did not like wigs. The baby had to wear wigs. She was snatching the wigs off because it was hot during the summertime. She hated those wigs. I just recently seen her in one of the local beauty supply stores because I'm in like 7 or 8 different beauty supply stores locally here in Detroit, Michigan. The child came up there. She was a living testimony sitting right here before me, head full of hair. She had the biggest smile on her face, and that just brought so much joy to my heart to know that I'm able to serve people at a higher level and be able to do something that's impacting so many lives, because when you lose your hair, you lose your self-confidence, and a lot of times that child was getting bullied and kids begin to, you know, commit suicide and all kind of things like that, which brings me to my why in my business is that I have always dealt with the youth my whole life. I am an evangelist, and I have had children that have been underneath me, and I just feel like if you train a child up in the way that you go, they will not depart far from the truth. And if I believe if we can catch our youth at a young age and be able to sow into their lives, and that's is why I'm trying to start a nonprofit organization also, and I'm hoping that this business will pave the way for that, which will be Kingdom Ambassadors, where we can actually sow into our children, because if we grab them at a young age, we'll be able to have them to come out to make integrity-based decisions that will not land them into the place of drugs, crime, you know what I'm saying, on the streets and going back and forth into the prison system, because it is just a repetitive cycle that continues to happen. But I feel like if we start from the bottom, we can definitely get them to the place they need to be. So just that's basically what my business is and why I'm trying to do what I do. And I'm going to keep pressing, and I'm just thankful for all the ladies that's on the phone with me, that my whole circle, we work together. We are hardworking, moving forward people that just believe in the bigger vision, and we know that we can't do nothing without God. So we just keep pressing. And I just love these ladies, and I just continue to pray for them, and y'all just continue to pray for our business, and that's basically it.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank
Amen.
You so much.
Thank you, Charity. Yes, thank you.
You're most
thank
welcome.
You. Yep. And was there
now,
someone
you know
else that was speaking?
Tiffany, what I forgot to do, I just gave the name of my business, and then I start talking about one of the obstacles that I didn't talk about my business. I started my business back in 2015 as a result of me spending over $34,000 above and beyond what my insurance company paid for me to go. I had was diagnosed with alopecia, severe arthritis, where they wanted to do surgery on my knees. I became a diabetic in 2012, and being a diabetic, you have extremely dry skin. And so I said, you know, I went to all of these doctors, and I said, you know what? An epiphany came over me and said that why don't you make your own product? So I have 36 organic products. I have products for the hair, to grow the hair, hair thickening oil. I have a moisturizer for the face, for as you get older, your face lose the electricity. And so I have one for smokers and for one for non-smokers. I have several body moisturizers, but I have 25 fragrances of whipped shea butter. And when you put the whipped shea butter on, your body stays moisturized and it smells good the entire day. And there's a piggyback on that. I went to my podiatrist today, and he said, oh, your feet smell so good. What do you have? And I just happened to. Tiffany's mother always tell us, advise us that whenever you go out, you make sure you take your samples with you because you never know who you may run into. So the podiatrist asked me, what did I have on? I told him about my business, and he said, do you have a business card? And I said, not only do I have a business card, I have a sample. He said, is it okay for me to use? And I said, of course. He put it on. He said, oh, my God, this smells so good. We ordered something that we sell to go on people's feet, but it doesn't smell like this, and this is oily. This is really nice. He said, you know what? I think I'm going to pick you up. And I said, hallelujah. So I'm just saying that, you know, like, same with these products. And the reason why I came up with them, because of all of the ailments that I was diagnosed with, I knew when I started doing my research, because as undergrad, I was a biology major. And so I said, you know, let me go back and put that hat back on and start creating products that not only benefit me, but so many other people throughout the world. And so that's the reason why I came up and decided to business and said and everyone else about creating jobs and helping people. I do a lot of community service and work with women for the Christmas holiday. I donate to the Angel Tree program where the parents or both parents are incarcerated, and we buy the kids. We adopt at least 50 kids for the holiday season and buy them toys and educational things to keep them going throughout the year. So I believe in that. I work with seniors, and I just do a lot, and I enjoy it. And Tiffany is a beast. I mean, she is a drill sergeant. But it's been we all have benefited from her knowledge, and we are so grateful and thankful for her. And we should have more people, because we have to, in order for us to see, we have to come together as a race of people. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you so much, Jackie.
Oh, you're welcome.
Oh, yeah. This is Michael, co-host of the show. I just wanted to interject here because I felt like there was an important point of note that I wanted to deliver about some things that were said in regards to Ms. Cartwright's, you know, entrepreneurial endeavors. A lot of people listening right now may not know, but when you connect with Ms. Cartwright and her business, Amara Products, you're not just connecting with her and her company. You're also connecting with this network of other companies from which, you know, we've had individuals come on and speak as representatives. You're connecting with that network of Black business. And the reason why that's important is because, you know, as Ms. Cartwright mentioned from her experience, seeing what I would describe, I don't think she described is this, but nepotism in the legal world, you know, the reason why it's important is because that nepotism is here to stay. And what nepotism means, some people think it, you know, misinterpreted as meaning only showing favoritism to people who are related to you. Actually, the dictionary definition of nepotism includes showing favoritism to people who are relatives or friends, and favoritism in terms of giving them things of value, whether they're jobs, resources, or information, like inside information. Other groups in America, other racial groups, are in-group preference, are nepotistic. They're giving knowledge, they're giving resources, they're giving heads ups, they're giving jobs to other people within their in groups. And they may not be as upfront with it because, you know, most other racial groups in America are more passive aggressive than African Americans are, than black people. Doesn't mean they aren't doing it as much. In fact, functionally, they're actually doing it more. You know, they circulate their dollars and their money within their community with their own kind far more than we do functionally, even though, you know, you hear a lot of black people at least verbally talk about how important black business is. Functionally, we still do need to, we have a long way to go when it comes to circulating our money in our community because groups still do it far more than us. They just don't say it as much. So this is very important because Ms. Cartwright represents the ability for us to start, you know, emulating that nepotism, emulating that in-group preference that we as a community are just going to need in order to survive and thrive, because she represents a connection to a network of black entrepreneurs and black business owners that you could go to if, let's say, you know, maybe you don't find a product or you don't find a service offered at her business. That's okay, because she's connecting you to other black businesses that you can go to as well. So that's the importance of, I just wanted to stress that because that's very important about, a very important point about what this network is that you've actually been building and you've been recruiting people to help you build, just for people in the audience who may not have recognized that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Beautiful. Michael, can I jump in right here too?
Absolutely.
Ms. Tiffany, outstanding group of ladies. This is James Cannon. I have five sons. Nick Cannon is my oldest son. And so my heart goes out to men across the nation, our young men. Many of our young men, it's a crisis in the nation with young men, Afro-American men. But these men are birthed and most of the time raised by powerful mothers. All month long, we've been doing shows on Mother's Day. We're going to continue 400 years of mothers, and that's my participation in this show. I guess we had the privilege to start this show over a year ago, every week being consistent. Powerful speakers Dr. Lee have brought to the table, Michael have pulled from them and educated and shared and set a beautiful platform, Dr. Tatum. We have a team where we wanted to empower men and women, young men and young women across the nation, just like you. But we wanted to empower them using these new internet tools, these internet radio shows, Zoom shows, viral shows, commercials, documentaries, pictorials. And then put them with entrepreneurial mindset, people that could share together and grow together, grow their network even. Whether many of the ladies tonight said they would love to set up a nonprofit. When you find that all of the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, the Hunts, the Fords, the Clintons, all of the major political people, the first thing they do is set up their foundations. Because people that love you can't give to you, but they can give to your foundation, and that's how you bless your family and the community, through your foundation. Mm-hmm. I would submit, because of the new tools like internet radio, that each one of your ladies, let us empower them with the show weekly, just like this, where they can invite and pour in and build their sharing skills with people all over the nation. Because I'm in San Diego, California, and there's people listening from all over the country. So these tools are so powerful. Now we can go viral with our video productions as well and amplify or Google Plux everything that we do and put it into the stratosphere. So I'm so thoroughly impressed and excited and encouraged. I don't know what to do. 400 years of greatness, y'all. We've been in this country for 400 years as a people. Made a lot of mistakes, a lot of tricks that were played on us, but we survived. We still here standing, growing and leading. I think we all should just go to the front of the line. I'd say go live every day. Power up, ladies. I've heard your business and they sound outstanding. But if you haven't powered up, then power up. And through Dr. Lee and our team, we would love to be a part of that. You know, synergizing, growing together. And, you know, then we would like to turn around and learn, too, and sit at your feet and learn how to share with our people, too, to get their product in some of these stores. You know, my son has product in Walmart's and Macy's, and he decided he wanted to go to college and get a degree in philosophy. I said, son, our people need you to be able to teach them how to get product into these stores. Our people need you to be able to go to school and learn how to do international business. So you got a business in every city, every state, all across the world. I think we philosophized enough, y'all. I think the essence, and Dr. King was trying to say, you know, it's about economics. And I think what you ladies are doing is outstanding. And I think I'd like to help and participate, and I think everybody else as well, Dr. Tatum, would love to be able to participate in helping what you do go to the nation. It's a beautiful philosophy, the teamwork, the people. And that's what this show was really about with Dr. Lee, entrepreneur, 400 years of us. None of us as good as all of us. What we can't do alone, we can do it together. This has been outstanding. Annetta is a powerful international person, and that's what we want to do, help foundations get up all over the country and the world. And from there, we can grow. It's like our bootstraps. We've been playing this game for 400 years, and now they finally let us get in and play. But we know this game, this entrepreneurial game in America. We don't want to leave. We want to get in and control, y'all. I commend you, Dr. Lee, outstanding group of ladies. Any way we can synergize together, we're in. This is outstanding. Appreciate you, Michael.
Absolutely. Let me just say, and we'll give you more time at the end of the show or towards the end of the show to do this as well, Ms. Cartwright, but if you could just plug your business again and give some of your contact details. And the reason why I'm asking you to is because I know that you are, like I said, a portal to this network of other black businesses. You know, I'm asking you not to shut any of the others out, but because I know you have access to all of them. And so if someone listening wants to access them, they could go through you in order to do that. So could you give your contact details, your business details, where people can find you, and the name of your business as well? Just one more time.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And again, thank you so very much. I'm so thankful for the opportunity. And for those who'd like to reach me, I can be reached via email, tiffany@amarabeautyproducts.com. That's my first name, T-I-F-F-A-N-Y, @amarabeautyproducts.com. And it's A-M-A-R-R-A, beautyproducts with an S.com. Also, my contact number, if anyone wants to call, text, I'm fine with that as well. It's 248-291-4876. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Glam Body Scrubs, GlamBodyScrubs. And that's on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And also, I have a personal page as well on Facebook, Tiffany Nicole Cartwright. And we as a group, many of the ladies who are on the call now, we also have a group on social media, Black-Owned Beauty Brands. And so that's also set up as a Facebook group, Black-Owned Beauty Brands. And it's on Instagram as well.
And so anyone who is even aspiring, is who's, you know, has a product or what have you that would like to learn more information about how to develop that brand, to pitch to stores, things like that, they're welcome to join the group. We right now have people from all over the country who are a part of it. And we're working together to support other businesses throughout this entire country so that we can all get there together.
Miss Tiffany, real quickly, would there be value in having distribution through the beauty shops across the country, particularly if we set up an internet show just like this, where the owner of the shop were the host of the show? We would step grade them in with the radio, internet. And then when they were ready, they would cut their cameras on, and then they would go live from their location. The beauty of that, then, all of the products could be showcased on those shows. The beauticians in the shops would love it. The owners would love it because it would bring foot traffic into their location. But if we could do that on the East Coast, then on the West Coast, we would have distribution within those beauty shops in a way that it could be controlled weekly, because you could literally get on a email line or a conference call the night before the shows and feed into those shows. And then, you know, the beauty of that networking that takes place becomes so strong. I'm curious, have you or any of your ladies written a book yet?
Yes, with the salons and spas, that's an awesome idea, phenomenal idea. One of the people that spoke earlier, Charity, she started doing that within the metropolitan Detroit area, so she does have her products with salons here in Detroit, but to do it on a national level will be absolutely awesome and amazing. That's a wonderful idea. In terms of the books, I've authored 3 books that are out on Amazon right now that I've authored, and I know that Crystal, who's on the call, has also authored a book recently as well.
Outstanding. What I'm finding, even with these shows, then we market our books, we market our products. That's intellectual property. Anything with a how-to on it, how to be a mother when our sons are marching in the street. Any how-to book, less than 100 pages. Okay, it's not the name of your first book, but it's the name of your second book, because then you got a brand. And from the brand, you build intellectually, because I can get your book on the Talk or the View, but you got to write the book. So where you have it now, we have fun and making sure people get your book, read your book. Then we turn it into an audio book, and you have another product. You know, a downloadable book, now you have another product. The entrepreneurial synergy that we pull out right now, ladies, is what I'm really excited about, and I think that's the essence of what, you know, as Michael say, we be unapologetic who we are to our people, and we lift ourselves up, you know. But I think in writing of books and more books, I think a part of your curriculum should be to help, you know, pull 300 women together and 10 at a table and encourage them to write, and you will get some bestsellers. Chicken Soup for the Soul was selling 20 million copies before the internet, before YouTube, you know, but they were compiling the stories. And we've got stories, y'all, 400 years worth of stories. Mm-hmm. If we can master Amazon, they deliver anywhere in the country, free of charge, within 2 days. Our pastors should be writing books every week. We should be encouraging, you know, to write and write hard, because we have the ability now to market to the world. 2 billion people on the internet. We have the ability, y'all. And so I'm excited. I just want to keep synergizing. My conversation is endless, but my time is not. So I yield back to my brother Michael.
Excellent. Appreciate that, Dr. Cannon. Let me ask you, Ms. Cartwright.
So
Where do you see your business in 5 years?
In 5 years, I expect to have a full-blown international beauty brand. And my mission statement is similar to that of Microsoft, where Glam body scrubs, Amar products, are in every household, on every dresser, at every bathtub, in every bathroom throughout the entire nation and countries around the entire world.
Excellent.
And those same manufacturing facilities that are starting here in Detroit, I want to be able to do the same thing in underserved, underprivileged communities throughout the entire country. And so Detroit is the start, but again, I want to have the same opportunities afforded to women everywhere.
Excellent. How about, let's say within a year or even the end of this year, a more something mm-hmm. closer in time?
Oh, yeah. So definitely by the end of this year, I expect to have the manufacturing facility definitely up and going. I expect there to be have it fully staffed with, you know, people working there, at least two, if not three shifts. And also my goal by the end of the year is to have at least five more big box retailers with products on their store shelves by the end of the year.
Excellent. Now, I want to ask you a question that's switching gears a little bit. With your knowledge and expertise and your particular experience, would you say that there are, or would you be able to speak on similarities and differences in terms of barriers to entrepreneurial success for Black women and Black men?
You know, that's a good question. I think that it seems in many cases that Black women are forging ahead, if you will. And I think that some of that has to do with the industries that seem to be like growing right now. For example, you know, beauty is big right now. There's a lot of, you know, skincare and things like that. But the good part is that I believe that as, even though it may start with women excelling in business, I definitely think that as we, as Black women, support Black men who are on the same entrepreneurial endeavors, I really think that we can maintain that balance and work together as teams so that those same opportunities can be afforded to, you know, our male counterparts as well. Yeah, I do think there may be a disparity. And I also think that as we become experts, as we develop our skills and talents in entrepreneurship, that will open up opportunities as well. For example, like I said, if an opportunity is presented to me, if I'm able to say, hey, I have other business owners that I'd like to bring to the table, that's going to open doors. And then as those doors are open, those same people who afford the opportunity, then they'll be able to do the same thing. And I think that in that way, as we accumulate, as we amass more power, then I think we can open up those doors so there won't be a disparity between Black men and Black women when it comes to entrepreneurship. You see what I mean? It may start with more doors
absolutely.
Here, but we have to use those doors to hold them open for our brothers as well.
Absolutely. Nepotism, in-group preference, establishing a network. But let me ask you, are there any problems, would you say, or obstacles that may affect Black women and Black men differently that you've noticed in entrepreneurship, like maybe something that may be easier or harder for one group in terms of obstacles in entrepreneurship? And the only reason I ask is because you were speaking to someone who deals with a food business over in California and is an African woman, actually from the continent of Africa. And one of the things she talks about is something that, you know, I've been aware of and that other people have been aware of, how the interaction is different between, let's say, a male and a female. For instance, she was speaking about interactions she's had with Asian males and how when she as a female approaches them, maybe when they're doing business together, she can kind of sense some condescension and maybe some racism in a way that she doesn't feel she may get as upfront or as openly if she was a male, right? If you had two males there So have there ever been times where maybe you've experienced or you were aware of differences in treatment between people you've engaged with, entrepreneurial, or let's say people you've worked with on the other side? Have you ever noticed the difference in treatment between males and females in your entrepreneurial work?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think Jackie referenced earlier in terms of contract manufacturers, being a black woman, starting and growing a brand, it's been very, very challenging because, frankly, there are some companies that just don't take you seriously and that don't feel that you're competent or capable of doing what you're doing. And so, and there's definitely, you can tell not only by the demeanor and the conversation, but also in terms of the work product. You know, I've had, frankly, been burned by manufacturers that have sent things out that I thought, you know what, that I don't believe would happen if I were. I think that again, we have to prove ourselves, if you will, and show that we're very serious and we're very committed to our brand. And we do have to remain firm and very strong in terms of what we will and will not tolerate. You know, we've had experiences with other third parties that we're paying to do a certain thing where that job has not gotten done. And again, I think there's an expectation that we're just going to, you know, say, oh, okay, that's okay, that's okay. Well, no, we have to put our foot down and say, no, this is business. You know, this is business, and you don't get a pass and you don't get to step over me because I'm a black woman.
Absolutely. I think it even highlights more so the importance of, you know, community empowerment on both sides, because, you know, as you said, as a black woman, as black women in general, there is a disproportionate, which I think is good, acceleration in the entrepreneurial growth of, you know, black women owned businesses and black women led businesses. But it is also important, like you said, to have the other side of that, the male side of it, catch up because of those instances where, you know, it may be beneficial where you don't just have a black woman there, but a black male there to also check certain, you know, other people engaged in the business deals so that they don't think they can step over a person, so that there's another person there to remind them that, you know, there's a certain level of respect to be demanded. And if they don't want to give that respect, then I think that's an area where, if need be, it would be useful to have a male there to provide that protection against that. So that does kind of,
absolutely,
in my opinion, further highlight the importance of, yeah.
Right. And like you were saying, and it's so important to really just stay woke when it comes to it. In other words, we have to be intentional. You know what I mean? We have to be intentional when it comes to supporting, when it comes to defending, when it comes to promoting. We have to make a conscious decision, understanding the way things work. You know, in other words, like I said, if I get an opportunity, I can't afford to just take advantage of it by myself and not reach back and try to help other people cross over. We have to be intentional and say, you know what, I'm going to make it a point to bring other people to the table, knowing that as we bring them to the table, then they will in turn bring other people to the table. But it happens because we have to intentionally say in our mind, this is what we're going to do. You see what I mean? In terms of sharing information, we have to make it a point and say we're going to be intentional about getting knowledgeable information about helping other people, no matter who they are, because they're in the same boat. We're trying to accomplish the same goals, and we'll all get there faster when we work together. United we stand, divided we fall. That's just real talk, and it has to be that way. We as business owners, those of us who are entrepreneurs, we have to support. We have to help one another. I've had experiences where some, you know, I've reached out to say, hey, I'm looking for a contract manufacturer. Can you help me? And it was another person basically was like, you know, let your fingers do the walking, use the yellow pages. Oh, okay. You see what I mean? When you know you're in a position, you have a successful business, you're obviously there. Why would you not share that information? You see what I mean? So like you said, it's there, and we have to acknowledge and understand that it's there. And we can't think that for some reason we're exempted from it or that we're going to be that exception. We can't have that attitude. We have to understand that it may not be in your court. It may not be the issue that you're dealing with right now, but you may face it later. And when you do, you're going to want somebody to have your back. So it's important for you to have somebody else's back.
Absolutely. And let me ask before, Doctor. I'll give you time. I promise, Dr. Cannon. I just wanted to ask, Actually, I might have forgotten my question. Okay, no, I remember what I was going to ask. What, if anything, provides you with optimism going forward? Like some things maybe you've seen happen recently or some things that have happened recently, some successes. What provides you with optimism for the future?
Well, I'm super optimistic right now here in Detroit at Global Empowerment. There's literally Friday classes that are going on where people are literally being walked step by step through the process of how to get your products into store shelves. People are being taught how to do pitch decks. They're given taught how to answer questions that buyers are going to ask. Last week, we even did a mock interviews where people came up on stage, and we had myself and another female who's a part of the organization being the buyers, and people sat across from the table and had to answer our questions to make sure that they're ready and that they have shelf-ready products. So I am super optimistic about that because we're talking, you know, hundreds, if not, you know, almost thousands of people that are participating and that are learning how we can become business owners. And I'm excited about the opportunities that are being afforded, but I'm even more excited because we all have an understanding that as these opportunities present themselves, that we have to open the door and hold it open for others so we can bring as many people over as possible. So I see things changing, and I think that as we move and as we hope that those reparations will come, that when they do, we will be in a position where we talk about keeping dollars in the community and circulating it amongst the community. In order to do that, we have to have businesses, we have to have products, we have to have services that we can provide to one another so that we can do that. And I'm excited and I'm optimistic about the fact that that's where we are. To know better is to do better. And it's an exciting time. Because of the revelation, because of the knowledge, because of the information that's now being shared and being made available thanks to platforms like this one throughout the entire country.
Absolutely. Very important point that you mentioned. Got to have the infrastructure.
Yes.
You go ahead, Dr. Cannon.
Beautiful. Outstanding. I'm curious. Three things. Number one, if you have training online that we can participate in. Number two, I'm curious from the judge standpoint, if I could change the subject just for a few minutes, as you've had an opportunity to sit and see our people come in time and time again in understanding the legal system and what's being done to us, if possible, Ms. Tiffany, my question really is, I'm wondering because I've had some opportunities. If anybody's ever approached you about doing arbitration judge type show, thirdly and lastly, could you speak 2 or 3 minutes to the young men that are listening across this country, based on what you've seen in the criminal justice system, what's really going on? And how a shift could be made a difference to those young men from 14 to 18. And then could you do the same thing in your own voice to those young ladies, 14, 15, that's wasting their time and not understanding and getting caught up in the trap of the legal system? Those three questions, you know, namely, if you got anything online, that training. And then, you know, arbitration show, I would like to talk to you about another time on doing something like that from a judge standpoint. And then what would you say to young men 14 to 18, young women 14 to 18?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. All great questions. In terms of the training, I do have some videos that I've done online that walk people who want to have products in stores through those steps. And so I'm happy to, I can either, you know, send those to Dr. Mary directly to you. I do make those available because I do get asked a lot, hey, how do I start? What do I do? I've got products. I want to get them in stores. Additionally, Global Empowerment, there's a website, globalempowerment.net. And so those who are interested in, you know, entrepreneurship, business, talking to stores, they can go to the website, and there's information is there. There's messages there. There's opportunities there. He talks about grant opportunities, just all of it. It's all there on globalempowerment.net. Also, in terms of the gusher, that's like on my vision board, actually. I've always dreamed of doing that, having a show and actually being able to, and I guess what in mind was always geared toward the community, and so because that's what I've dealt with. And so that has really been a dream of mine. Like I said, I could show you my vision board. I've got pictures of some of the ones who've had shows like, you know, Judge Mathis and others. Because as I said, that's been on my vision board for years now, something I've always wanted to do because I love business, but I love being a judge too. I love it. I really do. And just the exposure and the position that it puts you in because I am able to talk to young people. You'd be surprised. I do preside over unemployment hearings, but I do have the opportunity where there are young people on the call. For example, I had a couple last week, and they were, you know, very, very young. But it was a couple, a young man and a young girl, both of them I know under 21. And she had a position in a home, a residential facility, and unfortunately had let the young man, you know, in or allegedly gave him access, which cost her, you know, her position. And so, you know, one of the things that I had to try to politely share with them is that, first of all, you don't get anywhere when you're yelling and screaming and being disrespectful. Yes, you may not like the system. You may not like how things work. But if you come on and you tie the hands behind the back of the people that can help you, you're not doing yourself any good. You're doing yourself a disservice. And so that's one of the things that I would say is that, you know, calm the tempers down, especially when you're dealing with a person like myself who is committed and who wants to help. Don't make our jobs more difficult by being disrespectful, by being loud and unruly, because it's not going to get you anywhere. It defeats the whole purpose. Additionally, one of the things that I also would like to be in a position to show them is the option of entrepreneurship. You know, oftentimes they say, especially with our young men, they're so quick to be labeled and pulled out of the classroom and labeled as special needs, special ed, ADHD, the things along those lines, when in actuality, it's because they have brilliant minds in many cases, and it's because they're bored because what they're getting, the traditional education models are not working for them. And so what happens is typically because of that, they're mislabeled and they're held back, and they're made to think that they're less than what they are. And so it is so important to speak to that and let them know that you're brilliant, that you are a prince, soon to be a king. Some are kings already. You're a king in the making. And that even if academics don't seem to work for you, because formal education is not the route for everyone. And I think it's so incumbent upon us to be able to recognize that and to tell our young people, even if you don't get the best grades in school, some of the greatest minds out there, like the Jeff Bezos and the Microsoft, Bill Gates, the rest of them, many of them are dyslexic, ADHD, many of the millionaires and billionaires out there never even finished high school. Some of them didn't even make it through middle school. And so I would just say that for those who don't seem to do well academically, don't look at that and think that it means that you're a failure. Oftentimes, entrepreneurship is the role in what they should be doing, and that's the path that they should be on. And they don't have a curriculum that necessarily caters to that. And so I would just encourage them, don't be discouraged. Don't let those, and not to say this school's important. I'm not trying to downplay that. But what I'm saying is that it has nothing to do with stopping your greatness. And your greatness can be in another area that may be untapped. And so in encouraging them to pursue what's inside of them, whether it's writing, like we talked about earlier, authoring books, things along those lines, to be able to pursue that. And we as parents have to be able to see that in our children as well and not try to put them in a box and tell them, oh, you have to be whatever, doctor, lawyer, engineer, whatever it might be. No, but to tap into the creativity, tap into the gifts that are inside of them and let them grow in those gifts. The same and with the young women, to understand that they have value and to know that they don't have to define themselves by how many boyfriends they have or things like that. No, and to not downplay. Oftentimes our young girls can be really, really smart, but they feel they have to downplay that because they feel like it's not popular if they stand out because they have brains or what have you. And to know that, no, don't play that down and don't look at that as being a liability because it's an asset that can be tapped into, and to understand that you do have value. You bring value to the table. You are valuable and you are gifted and you were born with purpose. You have a purpose. You have a calling on your life. And it is so important to rise above the circumstances, rise above the situations, rise above the crime opportunities, rise above that and know that, again, the calling and God's hand on your life, that it is there, and to continue to move forward and pursue that.
Absolutely. One thing I'd like to add to that, just before we transition into taking some comments and questions from the audience, is circling back to something you said and putting a different emphasis on it, teaching them to follow their creativity and their passion. I would say also teaching them that they can make money in their creativity and their passion, whatever it is, whatever they're most creative at, whatever they're most passionate about, to let them know that they can make money through that. They can turn that into a business somehow, some way. So they can support and sustain themselves through that. And they should know that as well.
Absolutely.
For anyone listening in the audience that, you know, has any questions or comments they'd like to add to the show, if you press 1 on your phone, you should be able to connect to the show, and the text here will be able to open some of the lines so you can, you know, add any questions or comments. So press 1 on your phone if you have anything you want to say, or you have any questions especially you want to ask and you're in the audience. So just press 1. And if there are any people on the line waiting right now, if the text, I don't know if they're listening right now, if they could open up any of the numbers that have connected, that would be great. Okay.
I think at this point, everybody's line is open.
Okay. I didn't know if there's anyone in the audience that had a question they wanted to ask. So I'm just trying to provide an opportunity for them to be able to do that. And again, if you are in the audience and you want to do that, just press 1 on your phone. But as of right now, it doesn't look like there's any questions, so we'll just proceed with the show. I'll ask Ms. Cartwright again, since obviously you are our main guest on tonight. Using your legal background, your legal expertise, I know this is a little bit straying away from the discussion regarding entrepreneurship, but what, if any, legal challenges do you see facing the Black community, the African American community, when it comes to entrepreneurship? Are there any, if any at all, exists?
Yeah, one of the biggest challenges, I think, is really helping people to understand that you can become a business owner. I think that oftentimes people have dreams, have ambitions, and want to do it, but think that it's not possible, or think that it's not attainable. And so, and I think that's one of the biggest things. The hardest thing with entrepreneurs, I think, is just to get started, to take that leap of faith. And so, because as I said, many of us, you know, we just aren't raised and pushed in that direction. And so many people get discouraged and they think that it's not possible. And I guess that's one of the biggest myths. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, like one of the things that my brother says, he says that when you walk into a store and you look around, he said, don't just look at that as a product. They represent families. And if you look at each product, let's say you walk into a Walmart, a Target, a Meijer, and you look at those products that you see on the shelf, and Lord knows there's so many of them, and when you realize that's a family, and it was started by someone just like us, just like me and you, and oftentimes I say that we look at businesses and we look at the owners in that and we see them in their glory, but do you know their story? And the reason it is so important to know their story is because when you know their story, you're able to know that if you hit that rewind button, you'll see that in many cases they started off just like you and me, and then sometimes with far less. And one of the examples that I love to share that I learned over at Global was about a woman who was a stay-at-home mom, and she had a family, and she found a recipe in the Sunday paper here in Detroit, and she started, she used that recipe that she found in the newspaper, and it was a cheesecake recipe. So she started baking these cheesecakes in the basement of her Detroit home. No commercial kitchen, not mama's recipe, not grandmama's, not auntie's, but a newspaper recipe. And she baked those cheesecakes, and she sent them to work with her husband and asked him to take them on the job and see if anybody would buy the cheesecakes. And I think her first order was maybe for 12. He took them to work. People liked them. The cheesecake business blew up. And that same woman with the same cheesecake with recipes from a newspaper
went on and is the founder of the Cheesecake Factory. And when we think about the Cheesecake Factory now and waiting in long lines, and they're all over the world now, not many people realize she started in a basement in Detroit. Stay-at-home mom with kids. You see what I mean? And so I think that's what we need to see more of. I know at Global Empowerment we have what's called the Triple S, the Sunday Success Story, and every week we study millionaires and billionaires, but he hits that rewind button so we can see how they started. And like I said, so many of the people that you see that are very, you know, famous or established or whose stories that we study, they started with nothing. They started with nothing. And I think that in our community, it's the thought that you have to be rich to start a business, or you have to have this in place, you have to have that, you have to have this educational background. It's a deterrent in many cases, and it should not be. It should not be. And I think that once we can kind of get beyond those myths, we can dispel the myths about entrepreneurship and about what it really takes to start a business, I think that will open it up as an option. It doesn't cost a ton of money. Here in the state of Michigan, it costs $50. You file a piece of paper, so one-page document that you file with the state of Michigan for $50 to start your own LLC. Your tax ID number is free. The Dun & Bradstreet number, it's absolutely free. And so that's the type of information that we have to continue to share and impart so that entrepreneurship will become a more viable option for more of us. It's so
absolutely
much easier
than we think. Excellent. So to answer the original question about obstacles, more so educational obstacles and obstacles of mentality, not knowing and not realizing the potential, not being aware.
Exactly. It's misinformation and myth.
Absolutely. So I'm being told there is a caller on the line with a question, so I want to open the lines to allow that caller to ask the question. It's a 269 number. I don't know if that line is open.
Yes, thank you very much. To preface the question, from listening to you, that I wanted you to know that in the 1970s, after the results of the civil rights movement, the retaliation by the American government found that the black family was a detriment to maintaining the status quo in terms of Jim Crow and racism. Mm-hmm. They had found in the Patrick Moynihan Report of 1958 that the problem with the black family or the Negro family was that the black woman was too strong. So the black man and black woman, that family, and those individuals who were not lawyers and doctors but middle class, were the ones who supported Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Marcus Garvey, and the likes. And that the retaliation was that they created programs that would disenfranchise the male and created situations to destabilize the African-American family by creating single-family homes that it would be a single woman and her children, but no man, no husband. And as you know, that they had to have a man in order to have children. So you have that scenario, and then you have Ronald Reagan changing the standard of, well, not modifying, the federal guidelines of what a minority was. Minority had to be someone who lost land, disenfranchised, the Native American, the African American, mainland Puerto Rican, you know, the Alaskan. And he modified that to include women and others. But the thing was that the number one minority that was created, and she is a statistical majority, was the white woman. The European American woman was the statistical majority, but now is classified as a minority. And when they did the recent polls and they examined the minority companies, they found that the majority of the minority companies are either white women ran or where white women have taken over the husband's business and now have 51% ownership, but the status of the African-American community has not changed. And as a result, this push for systemic racism has exposed this and now want to rectify this. And so what I love is that what you have said in terms of, one, the doors open for the woman, and that has been the case because statistically and institutionally that they have been trying to decrease the number of African Americans. And so my one question to the judge lawyer is that tomorrow Michael and others are going to be doing a program with the Wayne State University School of Medicine, because in 2015, they tried to eliminate blacks in the field of medicine in the medical schools. And now we're in the same situation where they're trying to eliminate blacks in the medical schools again throughout the United States. Back in 2015, they wanted to replace them with foreign graduates from like Persia, Asia, India, stuff like that. Now, displaced the African American by replacing them with not just Africans who were new immigrants, but also they want to open up the Canada to bring in African Americans, where African Americans who have finished medical schools, some of them are not even allowed to finish their residencies in hospitals because it's not a position, because they're filled by foreign graduates. So, and all the graduates tend to be closer to European looking than African American looking. Is that a problem that you're seeing also in a law school? And then the next thing, do you feel that you will see pushback? Because if you try to reestablish the black family, because in 1958, 75% of all the black households, Negro households, had a husband and a wife. It was only after that movement that we went down. So do you see there's going to be pushback for that? And I'm going to say pushback from that because from the female community, who may not know that all these efforts were to disenfranchise, destabilize the African-American family.
Yeah. I don't know, and I just say thank you so much for the comment. You know, in terms of that lack of knowledge, I don't know that – I know that that's what's put out there, but I'm going to tell you, I think that black women have a better understanding than you may realize in terms of how that happens. I think that those of us like myself who have, been blessed with the opportunity to graduate law school and things like that, we are very, very, very aware of the disparity. And we understand that it's much easier for me. I graduated from U of M Law School, and I know that it was much easier for me to work for some of the largest law schools in the state than it was for black males who graduated with me. We understand that. We know that. Some of you may remember and know the story in terms of our past president with Barack Michelle Obama. She's a partner there at the law firm, and best believe it was much easier for her to hit that partnership role than it would have been for him, being a black male. So black women in many cases are aware of that disparity, and I think that because of that, we understand the importance of, like I talked about earlier, are making sure that we try to afford those opportunities, and when there is an opportunity, to bring black males to the table as well. In terms of the absence, in terms of the household, that's not, something that's by choice either. It's really, and people say, that we have this attitude like, well, I don't need a man. I can do this. And I take exception to that. A lot of us that are out here that are doing it, we're not single by choice. You know what I mean? We're not out here like, I don't need a man. I got my own. No. In fact, even right now, with all of the success and the happiness with my business, I would love to have that male partner here by my side and that we would be able to do this together. And I understand that there are opportunities that may be afforded me where I may have to open the door, but once that door is open, we're a team. We work together. So in terms of being divisive and women being able to make it and black men not, that doesn't make it right, and we don't turn a blind eye nor a deaf ear to that. We're fully aware of that, and most of us are committed to doing everything that we can as black women to change that.
What the presence of the African-American male in law school, is there a problem like we have in the medical school?
I don't know that the problem is so much getting in. I think that what many had to understand is that upon graduation, I think that some of the most successful ones in the black community have been the ones that have basically started their own practices. In other words, when you are able to graduate, you may not get picked up by, no matter how qualified you are, you may not be picked up by one of the larger firms because of it. Yes, there's a disparity. Yes, the numbers are very, very low. But at the same time, like I said, for those who launched out and started their own practices after law school, they've been very successful. In fact, like I said, they've been some of the most successful, the ones that basically became entrepreneurs where their business was their law firm.
Right. We're having a problem where they're not getting in, that they're that the number of African Americans and we thought it was law school, but I can't do the statistics. I'm not a lawyer, but I can tell you in terms of medicine that the medicine is almost an endangered species when it comes to the African American presence. So the dean of the largest medical school is going to be speaking at 6 o'clock tomorrow night, on saying that there's a disappearance of them in the medical schools, and there's a different disappearance in them in the residency. So there's a good case that within 5 years there may not be an African American graduate. Wayne State University in 2014 had only graduated one African American medical student out of a class of 300. And that was by design.
Can I jump in and ask a question right in there, brother? You're absolutely right. But as we identify the problem, my question would be, you know, we've got young men and young women all across the country capable, but when we go to them and talk about going to law school, or, you know, they're saying, you know, to get them through high school, I mean, is it our fault as the adults that we haven't homegrown, for lack of a better word, young people that's excited about the medical field, excited about the law field? I'd like to see an accelerated law program where we could do these pastors in these churches and prepare these young men and almost encourage them to the point when they come out of high school, they're excited. Their articulation skills, their communication skills are of such where they know they want to get through law school and get through in half the time. My question, brother, is in your travels, is it the apathy of our young people at this point to not even wanting to enroll get their bachelor's degree and do what they need to do in order to get their Jewish doctorate? Could we do a better job as a community? I guess that would be my question to my sister as well. What can we do to do a better job to get our young people excited about going into these fields?
I can tell you in 1989, in terms of Wayne State Law School, and there was another law school down in Detroit that I forgot the name of it now. At that particular time, it was the mindset. At Wayne State University School of Medicine, it was found out that one of the deans had the vision that not to include African Americans anymore, but to include Arabs and Asians and others. And she classified a new minority class, not going with federal guidelines. So it was the mindsets and the individuals that we found. We also found that when we interviewed the males, that the males who had some decent scores were being discouraged from applying to medical school and directed towards engineering and another fields or even business by the undergraduate advisors, even though they had good NCAP scores and were good students. So we found that it was being our talent was being redirected from medical school, and they were saying that the black males weren't applying. No, the black males were not applying because they were told not to. Now, the females had some more tenacity and would push through. We had that number. So we thought it was a mindset of upper administration. But we also found that that mindset is so prevalent that it cost lives down in Detroit in terms of how blacks are treated secondarily, substandard-wise, by Asians, by Arabs, by whites, and that was exposed by COVID. COVID brought it home, and that's why racism is now considered a public threat by the CDC and that a public health crisis by the federal government and by the state government. It's also a public health crisis. So racism has blocked our educational opportunities and also health opportunities. Yeah.
Appreciate that. I'm going to intercept here because we do have, I think, one more caller, and we want to make sure that we're on track for, you know, meeting our deadline. We do have to be off here about 11:20. So there is another caller on the line. We appreciate a previous caller your addition to the conversation, but I'm being told there is one more caller on the line whose number is ending in 0058. I don't know if that individual's line is open. Is that line open? Do we have the text to open that line? The number ending in 0058.
Yes, that's my number, Veronica Thomas. I hit one by mistake.
Okay. You're live.
Okay. Hi. I was up under Tiffany, but I didn't get a chance to speak, so I don't know if this is the opportunity to do it now.
Yeah, you've got about, because we are near the end of the show,
yes,
you should have enough time, about a minute or two. Go ahead.
Okay, my name is Veronica Thomas. I'll make it very short. And I'm also from Global Empowerment, and my company is SSG, Safety Sporting Gear. I started off as a brand for sportswear, and I just turned it into a full brand. And my goal is, as my company grows, I want to be a learning center all around the world. I want to rebuild my community, rebuild my middle school and my elementary school, because I had the worst time in school, things that I didn't understand. My teachers then would literally not help me, but they would just push me, oh, I'll get you later. And my passion is to open up training centers so this could never happen to nobody else. So thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. We are starting to near the close of the show. So before we do the outro, I just want to give an opportunity for any of the co-hosts on the panel to give any of their final closing remarks. So whoever wants to start, you can go ahead and give your closing remarks. Any other co-hosts first, and then we'll give a chance for Ms. Cartwright to give her outro as well as plug the business again.
This is Annetta, and I'll take the opportunity just to say I'm so honored that we have actually embraced the African-American woman, specifically on this particular session, the next few couple of weeks here, just to highlight the benefits, the quality, and the love and care that's poured into our community with all the efforts, the sacrifices that I've heard tonight on the phone, on the radio, internet lines. It's been phenomenal, and it actually gives encouragement to so many. And those listeners that may not have been able to give the call in, the inspiration is that I received tonight was that you can do it, and you can do anything if your heart so desires. So, Ms. Tiffany, I thank you so much for making yourself transparent and giving an opportunity and an open forum for so, so many, especially women, that have been in a position of not thriving based on fear, lack of, and the support perhaps necessary, that there is no there's no wall now. So I thank you for bringing down those barriers and those walls, standing firm for every one of the women that came on tonight and the gentleman that also just spoke. Just the inspiration overall tonight on this show has been phenomenal. Thank you so much, Dr. Lee. And again, every caller and every guest, it was absolutely amazing. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Any of our other co-hosts on the panel?
If Dr. Tatum has dropped off, I'll jump in, but I yield to Dr. Tatum if he's still on.
If not, you can go ahead, Dr. Tatum.
Beautiful ladies, outstanding. Again, I just want to reiterate, you know, let's empower, let's power up. Let's use these internet tools. We want to work along with you, synergize with you. 400 years of greatness. We've got a lot of stories to be told. We're working along with the commission, H.R. 1242. We've got to push to keep H.R. 1242 alive. And I do some research, reach out to us. We appreciate you, and it's been an outstanding show. Thank you, Michael. And to Ms. Tiffany, I appreciate you as well. Dr. Lee, it's been outstanding.
If Dr. Tatum isn't on, then we can go straight to Ms. Cartwright so she can give her closing remarks as well as to give the contact details for her business again. Dr. Tatum, are you with us? Okay. Well, we can just go right to you, Ms. Cartwright, then. If you could, again, remind us of name your business, where we can find you, and then, you know, any closing remarks you may have.
Yes, absolutely. First and foremost, thank you again so much to Dr. Lee and to the entire team. Thank you all so much for the opportunity and to everyone who has shared, called in, commented. Thank you all very much. My company is Amara Products, and the Glam Body Scrubs are now available. They're on Walmart.com as well, so anyone that would like to support can go straight to Walmart.com and order them, and they will be live in stores within the next few months or so. Also, the website is www.amarabeautyproducts.com, and everyone is invited to please follow us on Instagram, Glam Body Scrubs, GlamBodyScrubs, on Facebook and Instagram, and also Tiffany Nicole Cartwright. I'm on Facebook as well. And then, as I said, my contact number is 248-291-4876. And I can be emailed at Tiffany@AmaraBeautyProducts.com as well.
Appreciate that. I'll give my closing remarks then. If Dr. Tatum is not on, I'll say, you know, once again, another educational and empowering show. This conversation has certainly been informative for me, and I hope it has been for others listening as well. Personally, I want to thank our guests for joining us tonight, our co-host, and especially Ms. Cartwright, our main guest today, for being willing to come on and share your experience and for making yourself accessible to our listening audience as well, so they could take, they could participate in the conversation and shoot you some questions. I also want to thank Dr. Lee, especially because obviously this is Dr. Mary Lee Live after all, for allowing this platform and for allowing the conversations such as this one to be facilitated by the platform. So we hope for more productive conversations and dialogues like this in the future. And until then, this has been the show, Dr. Mary Lee Live. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.